years of OK Radio repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
One of the greatest history theatricians, one of the greatest history theoreticians has passed away. And you and I will talk about him in just seconds.
Maduro. I just grabbed this guy named Maduro, and suddenly he found out what happens when you F around. Maduro, we just nailed this freaking Maduro, and all his narco-commie friends will soon meet similar ends. Maduro, if I were him, I would really start praying that his execution will be delaying. Maduro, I'll never stop taunting Maduro.
It's 9 minutes past the hour, 9 minutes past the hour, coast to coast, from WGAN Maine to KFBK in Sacramento. Eric Von Doniken, the man who wrote Ancient Aliens, who created, was the prime mover behind the Ancient Aliens theory movement, the backbone, the financial backbone of the History Channel. He passed away this weekend. Robert Clotworthy. Robert Clotworthy is the announcer for the Ancient Aliens.
Oh, my goodness. I think probably the most popular question that they ask me is do I believe in what I'm saying? That's probably it. Am I a believer or not? And I have to explain to them that my job is to basically follow the lead of the late great creator of Ancient Aliens, Kevin Burns, who said he was an agnostic but open to the information.
That's Robert Clotworthy. You know that voice. You recognize that voice. He comes to us on $8,000 Neumann microphones. And don't deny it, Robert. And Eric Von Doniken wrote the book Ancient Aliens. He wrote the first book was Chariots of the Gods. Chariots of the Gods. And this is what Eric sounded like.
Enoch was taken up to the sky. In religion, they say he was taken up to heaven. There he travels or sees some garden. In the religion, they say, well, he's in the garden of the paradise. In my eyes, no, he's not in the garden of the paradise. He's in a mother spaceship and in a plantation of a mother spaceship.
Robert Clotworthy, how do you feel about losing Eric Von Doniken?
Well, you know, he was the granddaddy of them all. He was our spiritual leader. He was the person that actually, I guess, the whole reason that Ancient Aliens exists, the television show, is because of Eric and his work. And it's a great loss. I had the pleasure of meeting him several times and sitting and talking with him. And he was everything you would possibly imagine. He was interesting. He was articulate. He was passionate. He was smart. He didn't suffer fools lightly, and he was incredibly generous. And he is sorely missed. But his legacy will live on.
Chariots of Gods was the first book he wrote. He wrote it in the early 70s or early
1968, actually.
And started the whole movement of questioning accepted history. The first one to say, well, wait a minute, we didn't really get a manual on all this history. Not all of the evidence points to that. Can we question this and this and this? And he suffered dearly for it his first few years. Isn't that right, Robert?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think eventually the public caught on. The book sold millions and millions of copies. And when we would go to conventions, when he was on the stage, the crowd went crazy. He was so loved. So even though he went through trials and tribulations to get there, at the end he was adored and loved and listened to, and he was an amazing individual.
Did you see, and I don't know if you were in a position to see it, but did you see over the years, because you've been associated with the show since it began, did you see over the years any wiggle in mainstream archaeologists' positions because of the things he said? Did you see any of them go, well, maybe he's got a point?
Actually, yes. I've spoken to quite a few. And, you know, the questions that he was asking, hopefully he's in a place where he has the answers now. And, you know, he basically asked the questions and wanted to get us out of our comfort zone and to seek what the truth was. And if that's the guiding principle that Eric taught us, that's a good one. Just, you know, question authority. Don't take it at face value. Let's do a little research. Let's dig into it. Let's really see if we can find the answers.
I always thought that the best argument in favor of the bulk of his theories was, hi, have you ever stood next to a 4-ton block? and it, what is that, a bronze chisel you've got there, a copper chisel? Now, you're telling me that this 4-ton block could be moved with the copper chisel and logs? No, you don't understand. It would crush the logs. And he was the first one to say, well, wait, let's just look at the real world. These blocks would crush the logs. And there are these cave paintings that very clearly show spaceships, people pointing to the spaceships, people who were living in caves and needed to hunt for buffalo to eat don't have time for abstract art. They were writing down what they really saw. They didn't have time for any Picasso stuff. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, they were just telling the story of what they experienced at that time. They didn't have the written language, so they did it in pictures. And so, absolutely, I agree with 100%. And I've spoken to people in, like, the stone-cutting business who've been to the pyramids and say, we wouldn't be able to do this with the technology we have. We have a hard time delivering a countertop. You're telling me that 3,000 years ago, these people were able to build these pyramids with 40 to 100-ton blocks and have them perfectly aligned and have within a fraction of a centimeter. I mean, it just defies logic. You certainly have to ask the question, how was it possible?
Oh, by the way, next time you do an Ancient Aliens and you're talking to those producers, they're still in first run, right? You're still making new ones?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I just started the new season last week. On Monday of last week, season 18.
Wow.
season 18, yeah.
How many episodes are you going to make this year?
I think we're doing 20.
Wow.
So that should take us over 300 in total. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I wish that Eric would have lived long enough to see what Steven Spielberg is going to be releasing later this year, because I think it's going to totally align with his thoughts on the Ancient Alien theory.
Do you know what Spielberg's going to release? Do you know what it's about?
I've seen the teaser trailers, and it is about aliens. It's about first contact. But, you know, the specifics obviously are not, you know, in the public sphere, but it really looked interesting and intriguing. I think that we're going to get a big bump in our ratings for Ancient Aliens when that movie comes out.
Robert Clotworthy is the voice of Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. And I want to indulge 30 seconds of our relationship. Could you do me a favor? Next time you're with those producers, there's a question that keeps hovering in my head. You always show the pyramid and explain that the outside casing blocks, which were bright white and shined against the Egyptian sun, these bright white casing blocks were stolen and used in other buildings throughout Cairo and northern Egypt. That's the theory, right? Okay. I've never seen a shot of any of those stones on any of those buildings now. Those were big blocks. Could you please show me where one of those blocks has been repositioned, if they're all so sure of that? My wacky theory, Robert, and I know the great thing about your job is everybody brings you wacky theories. my wacky theory is that there weren't any. that it's unfinished. To me, it looks like an unfinished building. I'm like, show me the casing blocks. That's what there was supposed to be. There are a couple at the bottom. Where are the rest of them? What do you mean they moved into Cairo? Great. Show me a shot of the Cairo casing blocks.
Well, I spoke with a friend who's in the stone cutting business who's seen the pyramids, and he thinks that they were intentionally cut them in a way that they would appear to be unfinished. Oh. But the actual cutting and the way they're pieced together is absolutely perfect. Oh, so man. It may have been by design, but that's a good question. I will certainly ask the producers about that.
All right. Robert Clotworthy, a final thought about your friend Eric Von Donegan, who passed away this weekend.
Eric, job well done. And hopefully you were at peace, and the questions that you were asking, you have the answers.
Eric Von Donegan. Eric Von Donegan passed away this weekend. Robert Clotworthy, the voice of Ancient Aliens, a great friend of Sterling Every Damn Night. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Sterling Every Damn Sunday Night.
It's Dan and Becky Gaffney. You know, there are a lot of home remedies that float around our house. Garlic in the ears might be one of the stranger ones.
You know what? At least you like my smell when I'm done. I smell like a pizza.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies. Live on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sex worker rights. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling. Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling across the USA.
23 past the hour, national radio show. Eric Von Donegan, the writer of Chariots of the Gods, came out in 1968. That's how long his theories have been there. His work is the prime mover behind Ancient Aliens, the show on the History Channel.
Enoch was taken up to the sky. In religion, they say he was taken up to heaven. There he travels or sees some garden. In the religion, they say, well, he's in the garden of the paradise. In my eyes, no, he's not in the garden of the paradise. He's in a mother spaceship and in a plantation of a mother spaceship.
That's Eric Von Donegan, who passed away this weekend. Yes, that's right. I said he passed away this weekend. He was 80 years old. No, he wasn't. He was older. He was like 90 years old, wasn't he? Yes. And Vilo Huell is one of America's experts on the Ancient Alien theory. He's an expert on the Ancient Alien show on the History Channel. I am so privileged that Vilo Huell is joining Sterling Every Damn Sunday Night. Welcome, Vilo.
Walter, I'm going to tell you I'm crushed next to the Bible, the Torah, the Quran. Chariots of the Gods is perhaps the most important book ever written. Eric Von Donegan gave us so many ideas that have turned out to be true, over time. All he did is ask questions, and he created this Ancient Aliens moment and this movement with Giorgio Tsoukalos and David Childress and William Henry and all the other great scientists that you see on that wonderful program.
Vilo Huell, would you say that David Childress best captures the spirit of the now spirited Eric Von Donegan?
Yes, he does. His enthusiasm, his ability to ask those questions and tell the story of the Ancient Aliens theory, David Childress, his wisdom is so important for right now.
All right, this is Vilo Huell, who's an expert on the television show Ancient Aliens and an expert on the book Chariots of the Gods, written by Eric Von Donegan, who passed away this weekend. Broken here. We broke this story. Vilo Huell brought the story to me first thing this morning, and we were on it. I got Robert Clotworthy, the voiceover talent star of Ancient Aliens. Now, there are a tremendous number of organized memorials throughout America, throughout the world. I see shots, 10, 20, 100 people gathering in the streets. I believe a lot of this is about Eric Von Doniggan's passing.
Yes, and the mainstream media, Walter, they're lying to us saying it's protests against ICE. No, it is people that are standing up for Eric Von Doniggan. In fact, right now, tonight in Roswell, I understand there's quite a gathering of people that are crushed by the loss of Von Doniggan. And I know our own Dave Scott, spacedoutradio.com, I know that Eric Von Doniggan was a personal hero to him as well.
It is surprising that anybody in mainstream media would try to minimize the impact of Eric Von Doniggan.
Hello, I'm Lee Harris.
And pretend that there's this interest among Midwesterners in situations in Venezuela or ICE in, what, Oregon or Minnesota. Very minor ripple. I mean, if you're going to ShopRite right now and you're buying food, it's not important. What's important is every Friday night we watch Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, voiced by Robert Clotworthy. This was inspired by the hard work of Eric Von Doniggan, and the original title of the book was Chariots of the Gods. And then the question mark was later removed when there was too much when people actually started questioning Eric's theories, which should not be questioned.
No, in fact, they became statements. They started as questions. That was his juice to get the book published. And he went through a lot. In fact, he self-published it. He ended up going to jail because, well, you know, he had to get money somewhere. And he was working at a very nice hotel in Switzerland. But, you know, hey, he made it up for it. He paid everybody back. That's good. And he stood up, Walter. He created this movement that now has just periods behind it because it's fact.
And that's why across the country and around the world, in town squares everywhere, there are citizens mourning in group, gathered together to share their Eric Von Doniggan stories. When you see these televised gatherings of people this weekend, that's what they're gathering about. They're gathering to memorialize, to mourn the death of Eric Von Doniggan. Thank you very much, Velo Houle. Thank you for being on Sterling every damn night. Walter M. Sterling, it's about 29 past the hour. This is a live radio show. There's nothing else live. Don't waste your time. I'm going to have live updates from L.A. on the Golden Globes, the award that you absolutely don't care about. But the fact that, well, wait till you hear one of the clowns who won. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Sterling every damn night. Every damn night. Whoa.
Well, you can imagine my shock and disgust at who tonight won a Golden Globe? What is it? The award nobody cares about? Boom Boom Mateus in Los Angeles in California.
How are
who are some of the winners tonight on the Golden Globes?
Well, Tiana Taylor won for Best Supporting Actress in her performance in One Battle After Another. I don't know if I agree with that, but then again, this is the awards that, as you said, nobody cares about. Well, they do because they like getting an award. Best Supporting Actor went to Stellan Skarsgård for Sentimental Value and had some good competition there, but he went away. Best Actor in a TV Series, Drama, Noah Wiley for The Pitt. I don't know. Have you seen that show, The Pitt?
Deserves it.
Okay, good. And I know that Jean Smart, yet again, has won one more time role in Hacks.
Right, because who wants to win against her? You'd be cursed for the rest of your life.
Now, the show Adolescence, which has really been a head-turner for many people, Best Supporting Actor went to Owen Cooper in Adolescence. He's the young guy. Also, The Studio, Seth Rogen won as the Best Actor in a TV Series or Comedy. So when you earlier hinted to some clown winning, I don't know if that was the clown you were referring to.
No, you know okay. But you know what the problem is with that win? The problem with that win is it is an inside baseball show, but more importantly, yep. There is no acting. He plays the same rhythm, notes, delivery every scene. He never varies his delivery. He never varies his character. You get no inside flash as to who this is or why this is. He just keeps playing the same vaguely frustrated, incompetent guy, scene after scene after scene, to the point where at the beginning it's funny, and after a very little while it becomes wearisome. Walter Sterling said, "I'm sorry for going on."
Well, let's see. What else have we got here? Paul Thomas Anderson won for One Battle After Another for the Best Screenplay for a Movie. Best Actress in a Musical Comedy went to Rose Byrne for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. This is a movie where she plays a mother who's a psychoanalyst. She did a scene with Conan O'Brien, was in the picture, too, as another psychoanalyst. Great performance, but my gosh, it's that sort of that Anna Magnani kind of performance, just full of emotion and absolutely bonkers, which is, of course, probably why she won, because when nominated by others, they seem to like it when an actress goes bonkers. But here's a comedian that won. Either that, or they have a terminal illness, or they're going to die in the film. Those are the things to get an award in a movie. Best Actor Musical or Comedy went to Timothy Champagne, as we call him on this program, or Timothy Chalamet, for Marty Supreme. Once again, he's happy. And apparently at the show, he did thank Kylie Jenner for supporting him. Don't know, because I was driving at the time, whether he actually mentioned her name at this award show or not. We'll have to follow up on that later on. But let's see. There was a limited series award handed out for Stephen Graham for Adolescence. And as I made notes along the roadway, the Best Actress in a Limited Series Anthology or Movie Made for TV, Michelle Williams, Dying for Sex. I haven't seen the show, so I don't know if that's good.
Did you say Michelle Williams won?
Yes, for Dying for Sex.
What did she win for? What was the category?
Dying. Oh, the category is Best Actress in a Limited Series or Anthology Series Made for Television.
I'm going to be your friend. You want to check and make sure that's correct.
I'm not. I'm looking right here now.
You're driving. You're looking at it right now.
No, I'm not actually driving. I pulled over to the side of the road.
All right.
But I do have it right here. 46 okay. minutes ago. All Best right. Actress. I'm not making this up. In a limited series, anthology series, or motion picture made for television, Dying for Sex, Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams.
I don't make
always,
this stuff up.
Yeah. I know. Michelle Williams wins everything because she had a dead ex-husband. Her ex-husband killed himself with a heroin overdose, and people have cried for her ever since. Meanwhile, her best acting was in Dawson's Creek.
Mm. Sure.
I don't get that one. That one I'll never get.
All right. Cinematic and box office achievement went to, this is where the movie makes a lot of money, but they don't really want to award it because they think it's great. But since it made money, they have to nod at it. For Sinners, which was the great horror vampire film that came out at the beginning of the year. And the Best Director for a Motion Picture went to Paul Thomas Anderson for One Battle After Another.
And
what
he should win because
here? That's about it.
He should win because of who his father is. Do you know who his father is?
Tell me.
His father's Ernie Anderson, the man who was the voice of ABC in the 70s and 80s. He's the one who went, The Love Boat, and tonight on The Love Boat. That was his father.
Wow,
that was Ernie
great.
Anderson. Yeah, the best thing about that, though, is it's nice to know they, in fact, had a good relationship, because Paul Thomas Anderson's production company is called Gugliardi Productions, which was the name of a TV movie character, a movie host character that his father played in Cleveland on local TV. He played a monster on horror movies in afternoons on a Cleveland TV. His character's name was Gugliardi. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we know they had a good relationship. If it's Gugliardi Productions, and he's freaking Paul Thomas Anderson, oh my, who produced the greatest movie of all time, produced Licorice Pizza.
There you go.
That is the greatest movie of all time.
Okay.
All right. Now
I'll have to rewatch it through the window of Walter Sterling and see how I might see that. Oh, Ricky Gervais just won for his stand-up comedy performance called Ricky Gervais Mortality. And that's it so far. That's what we have. And, of course, did I mention Timothy Chalamet? Yes, I did. I mentioned that Champagne won for his performance in Marty Supreme, maybe for the paddling.
Did Timmy thank Kevin O'Leary for the paddling?
No, but he thanked Kylie Jenner.
Well, we'll have to find out about the name thing. You're absolutely right. I appreciate it. Mateus Boom Boom from Hollywood, thank you very much for being on Sterling every damn night. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's, 43 past the hour. It's a coast-to-coast radio show. It's a live radio show. And we're driving on I-90, the worst road in the world, I-80, a little better. And I thank you for listening in the 18-wheeler and the 4-wheeler. This is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sex worker rights. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
It's Dan and Becky Gaffney. You know, there are a lot of home remedies that float around our house. Garlic in the ears might be one of the stranger ones.
You know what? At least you like my smell when I'm done. I smell like a pizza.
Coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
So anyway, we were getting married, and my parents didn't care that I was marrying a woman. They cared that she's not Jewish. How funny is that? I mean, they love her, but they were like, it would have been great, you know, if you married a nice Jewish girl.
You were probably too young to remember this.
Our first day.
We'll get to that later. No, you're probably too young to remember this.
Day 142 of the Iran hostage crisis. And the Shah's arrival in Egypt complicates efforts to free the hostages. We'll talk about that tonight with the top Iranian diplomat in this country and with the wife of one of the hostages.
That was the first edition of ABC's Nightline, hosted by Syracuse University graduate Ted Koppel. It was a very long time ago, but it started Nightline. It was the first live late night news show, national show, and it was a huge hit. Very quickly, it had the number one ratings in late night ahead of The Tonight Show. That's how big it was. Like, David Letterman was afraid to go on late at night to compete with Nightline. He thought that was the dominant show, and it was. He was afraid of that. Ted Koppel, very vaguely pleasant man. They held 66 American embassy employees for, 2.5 years?
Day 142 of the Iran hostage crisis. And the Shah's arrival in Egypt complicates efforts to free the hostages.
And I'm like,
talk about that tonight.
Still the Khomeini. Khomeini was the guy then and now. In 1980, it was Khomeini, and now it's still Khomeini. Like, what? Same guy. My feeling was, along with many Americans, Jimmy Carter was president. My feeling was, along with many Americans, that 66 American employees of the U.S. Embassy in Iran were being held hostage, kidnapped, taken off the streets, put into basements, chained to radiators in secret parts around Tehran. My feeling was, we should bomb the country now. Take military action now. Part of the tragedy of this is that the Carter administration sent in helicopters to attempt a rescue. and one of them crashed, maybe two of them crashed. I don't remember all the details, but it was ugly. One of our helicopters crashed during the rescue, revealing that we were trying to rescue them, revealing that we had invaded their airspace, giving away every strategic advantage we had. Probably weren't going to try it again. From that day on, from the moment those 66 hostages were kidnapped till now, this has not been our friend. Iran has not been our friend. I know what we do with a country that isn't our friend. Let's give them billions and billions of dollars in cash on a wooden pallet and have the president of the United States wrap it up and send it to them. Barack Obama gave them a pallet of cash. Never really clear why. Many have evil theories. Let me find out how much money that was. Maybe you know. Let me find out how much that money was. Cash to Iran pallet. Let's see what it says. The Obama administration transferred a total of $1.7 billion in cash to Iran in 2016, with the initial $400 million delivered on wooden pallets on an unmarked cargo plane. Forget about unmarked bills. We sent them the money on an unmarked cargo plane. This was part of a settlement of decades of financial disputes, but the timing coinciding with the release of American prisoners sparked controversy and accusations of a ransom payment. I think it was. The money was part of a settlement over a failed arms deal from before the 1979 Iranian Revolution. The U.S. had received $400 million from the Shah's government for military equipment that was never delivered. And the $1.7 billion included the principal amount plus an estimated $1.3 billion in interest. In interest. We paid interest on that. $1.3 billion in interest. You know how it goes when you don't pay your income taxes and they start charging you interest? I think this should cover it. This should have covered it. Due to U.S. sanctions that isolated Iran from the international finance system, we didn't allow them to bank and prevented direct banking relationships, the payment had to be made in cash using non-U.S. currencies, euros, Swiss francs, the really good currencies. The total amount was delivered in several installments, $400 million airlifted to Tehran. These were and are our worst enemies and among the worst human beings on earth. And now that there are protests against the Shah of Iran, the way they deal with their protests is they cut off their heads. They just shoot them. There have been over 50 protesters throughout Iran that have been killed for what? Protesting? Yeah. You and I are going to talk to a woman, an Iranian woman, in just seconds, who was held prisoner when she was 18 years old in an Iranian prison. She was held prisoner in an Iranian prison. And she saw children being tortured in Iranian prisons. She was threatened daily in the Iranian prisons. I can't wait to ask her if we should just bomb Iran. You give somebody $400 million, you give somebody $1.7 billion and on a wooden pallet that's untraceable, I think from that point on they should just be very nice to us. I think they should be extremely pleasant to us. Or Barack Obama should be on TV right now explaining that this is what he wanted or this isn't what he wanted. But he did it. He did it. Many have believed he has always been working for Iran. I'd be more than happy to believe that. How about you? I have a phone. It's 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. This isn't politics. This is about humanity. This is about humanity. So let's talk about it from a humanity point of view, a human point of view, with a woman who was held in an Iranian prison for months at the age of 18 because she protested against the government. And she'll join us in just seconds. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. It's a live radio show, coast to coast. I have an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I have a great website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com, where you can find out too much about the show. Oh, and I've got to remind Lee Harris, we have to update the copyright on that. Do you know if you have a website and you don't update the copyright to this year, Google is not inclined to feature you? No, really, they're not inclined to show you in searches. Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
As we grab these words out of the air, through the windshield, you and I are looking at snow throughout the Northeast and a beautiful night on the West Coast.
Sterling, every damn night from sea to shining sea.
All right, it's 7 past the hour, live radio show, Shireen Merriman.
No, Shireen.
Let me get through it. I would have let you do it. Let me just mispronounce it a few times, and I would have said, is that how you say it? And then you would have corrected it. No, it's more than fine, because the fact that you're here on Sterling Every Damn Night is more than a miracle, and I will share with you why it's more than a miracle in just seconds. But the fact is that the odds of her being alive are lousy. The odds of this woman being able to be on the phone with me and giving me the opportunity to mispronounce her name, the odds are lousy because of her youth, because of what she experienced at just 15 years of age. Think about this. You got a kid, you got a 13, a 14-year-old daughter. Think about this. During the 1979 Iranian Revolution, she became involved in pro-democracy activities in Iran and supported the People's Organization of Iran, PMOI. Less than 2 years later, she was arrested. At 17, she was arrested for her activism, becoming one of the youngest political prisoners of her time. And she wasn't a prisoner in Beverly Hills. She was a prisoner in Iran. In her time, she endured severe torture in Evin prison. Her case drew international attention and intervention from the Red Cross. How long did it take the Red Cross to get there?
I thank you so much for this introductory. Honestly, I don't know. I was in prison and I was in solitary confinement. Apparently, my mother, when she was told, she was unable to visit me. They didn't allow any visitation. So she was told through my other cellmates that Shireen is in solitary confinement and she has been severely tortured. So my mother starts going to knock on all the doors, including Red Cross. So it took about, I think, 3 months because it was sometimes in May when they were allowed to come to my cell and to see me in my cell.
Shireen, to the degree that you're comfortable revealing it or even remembering it, please share with us a little of what the torture entailed.
Well, it was in end of February, and in Evin prison, which is the north part of Tehran, it's very, very cold. So one night they just attacked our section and they took me and a few others out. They took us literally out in the wood area and they start using cables cabling my back, my hands, and then they throw me in a hole, and they put, they basically buried me to my neck in the hole. And then they brought a Russian roulette, and they start playing on my head. And it was a very long night, and other things happened. So it was a very, very crazy night. I still don't know how I survived it, how am I alive, except that I'm thinking my destiny was tolerate everything, leave Iran, come to U.S. as a refugee, and start a new life, but never forget what happened before, and it made my mission to fight and continue the fight and be the voice of those friends and cellmates that I had to say goodbye to at every single afternoon when they called them out for executions. And back then, they used firing squad right behind the walls of the places that we were staying. So we could hear the firing squad, the coup de grace, which is the last shot to the head. And we were counting those just to find out how many people were executed that night. And also, you could smell the gunpowder. And that was like inhaling the friends and the friends that you just lost that night. And it's sticking in your body and soul. And I think, honestly, the worst thing for me, the one thing that I never forget is those times that we said the last goodbye. I forgot what happened to me. You forget what you, it happens physically to your body, but you never forget what it happened in your thought and your brain and your soul. And that's what happened to me. And I see it as my obligation and commitment to make sure that Iran is free once and for all. And we would not have any more prison, and everybody would be entitled to have their own opinion. And we would have a freedom of expression.
Shireen Nariman, guest on Sterling every damn Sunday night. While your kid was doing beauty pageants, ballet, after school activities as a teenager, she was in a prison in Iran where she was tortured, thrown in holes in freezing weather, and every night got to hear fellow cellmates being executed by Iranian thugs. That's how she spent her teenage years. You were there for how many years?
2 years. I was very lucky that I was staying just for 2 years. There were people that were in prison for 10 years, 11 years.
How did you feel when Barack Obama gave these criminals a pallet full of cash, $1 billion full of cash on his last day in office? He couldn't give it to them through the banks because we had sanctioned them against using banking. He delivered to them on an unmarked, not bills, unmarked airplane. He gave them over $1 billion in cash on a wooden pallet. When that happened, how did you feel about that?
I was really, really upset because I knew that that money is not going to be spent to make the lives of ordinary Iran better, living in Iran better. It would be used to fund terrorism abroad through their proxies. It would be spent to make, missiles and also have the nuclear bomb. And also for the leaders, the IRGC leaders and the Supreme Leader to get most money, putting it in their own accounts somewhere in Europe, in the world, in Europe, in one of the islands, different countries. They would, they would basically steal the money. So I knew none of it. Not even one penny would go to make people's life better. And that was exactly what happened.
That's exactly what happened. Now, could you share with the Midnight Misfits, the great listeners who listen to this show coast to coast, could you share exactly what you feel we can do that would be the most supportive, positive thing to help your fellow Iranians today?
I think the most important thing right now is very solid and a strong political support of Iranian people and of their opposition. And also, which I elaborate on that, like, you know, supporting the only alternative, viable alternative is National Council of Resistance of Iran, who has a elected president for the National Council of Resistance, which is a woman, Madame Maryam Rajavi. She has a 10-point plan. She has a vision, mission, and organization to support for a free, democratic, secular, non-nuclear Iran. And that's what is needed. We need a political support right now. For instance, I really suggest that to shut down all the embassies or intersection offices that the Iranian regime has in the Washington, D.C., and also at the U.N. office in New York, close them down, expel their diplomats, and ask our allies in Europe to shut down their Iranian embassies there and to expel all the diplomats. Freeze all their assets anywhere that they are. As we are speaking right now, people are being killed in Iran, young people. We have reports that maybe over 2,000 to 3,000 people have been killed already in last 14 days. The internet is shut down. We do need to have the internet to be open to the people in Iran so they can send us what is really reports on what is really going on inside of Iran. We need that. And also we need a firm policy toward all these lobbies. There are so many lobbies right now, Iranian lobbies that are openly and actively working in Iran on behalf of Iranian regime and restore their relationship with or finding a way to negotiate, continue the negotiation.
Shireen Nariman is a native of Iran. She's in America. She suffered horribly as a teenager. She was arrested for protesting in favor of democracy. Do you think we should just go in and kidnap the Ayatollah Khomeini and just shut all of this crap down?
I don't think it would be necessary, because look at what Iranian people are doing right now, even under all these things that is going on, and because there are different hands in Iran. You know, we have to make sure that the whole regime in its entirety is gone. We have IRGC. It has to be dismantled. We have all these
What if we send in our Marines and just took them out?
I really don't think that is necessary, as long as we have support the opposition leader firmly, because we know what is going on in the streets of Iran, and we know what is going on in the infrastructure of Iran. So we know things has to be changed and how it can change for better, for having an open society and also have relationship, fair relationship with all the countries in the world. And we would have it, that would bring stability when it comes from within people, from through the people, then it's going to bring stability, you know, because Iran has different tribes in Iran. So
right.
We all can coordinate that. Yeah.
No, I understand that. And I respect what you're saying. Shireen Nariman, an Iranian citizen, suffered as a teenager in prison in Iran, tortured. I think your suggestion is sane. and way too slow. I'd send in the Marines and just take them out. I'm Walter M. Sterling, 21 past the hour. This is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling, Sterling every damn night. Woo! Yeah, that's right. Sterling every damn night.
Hey! Walter M. Sterling, good evening. You and I were talking moments ago with a woman who, as a teenager, an Iranian woman, Shireen Nehraman, was held captive as a teenager. Think about your daughter, the one you're worried about for prom, dance class, participation trophies, real trophies, Little League. Think about your 16, 17-year-old daughter held in Iranian prison, surrounded by fellow prisoners who, one at a time, night after night, were taken out back to the execution wall and murdered. And as she said, the smell of the gunpowder, it's as though we were inhaling our fellow inmates. She was 16, 17. Some nights where it was cold, they'd throw her in a pit, bury her to her neck, and throw things at her head, play Russian roulette with her head with guns. How she survived that, she doesn't know. How she can talk about it today, I don't know. My instinct with thugs like that is to just bomb them. Or, to be kind, send in our military and take out all of the people who are running Iran. Instead, Barack Obama, on his last day in office, took a wooden pallet, filled it with cash, wrapped it in saran wrap, and put it on an unmarked airplane, not unmarked bills, an unmarked airplane. The good stuff, Swiss francs, euros, the good currencies. Couldn't use ours. And I asked her, how did you feel about that? Because remember, these people that were getting billions of dollars on a wooden pallet had thrown her in a pit at the age of 17 and shot her in her head playing Russian roulette. At the age of 17, threw her in a pit on a freezing dark Iranian night and shot her on her head. And miraculously, she left and lived to be able to tell her story tonight on Sterling every damn Sunday night. My instinct is, let's nuke them. No problem. That was 20 years ago. And these clowns have been going on and on ever since? What? Or send in the military, Mr. President, and take out their leadership. This has gone on a very long time. Since 1980. This has gone on a very long time. I think we've reacted to them like cowards. My hunch is our friends in Israel think so too. But I was honored to have her on tonight. I was honored to be able to hear the perspective of an Iranian who loves her country. She loves Iran, and she loves the people of Iran. And her solution is to support the opposition leaders, which is sane and sober and peaceful. But I don't think they deserve it. I think we've waited a long time for that regime to change. I think a lot of crooks have gotten a lot of that billion dollar pallet of cash. That all went to the thugs who run the country. None of that went to help the people of Iran. There are no strings on cash on a wooden pallet. I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling every damn night. Yeah, that's right. Sterling every damn night.
All right, 855.
Eat the dough. JB Bakery. Selena and Steve. Sterling every damn night.
You kids are going to have to wait a second. I have to do the other part of the show first. So hold on. We'll play your jingle again, I promise. Mark in Roseville at 855-839-1210. Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday night. Hi, what's up?
Oh, yeah. 46 years ago, I was in the Marine Corps. I was a combat Marine. I joined the Marine Corps when I turned 2 weeks after I turned 17 and turned 18 at the base of Mount Fuji in Japan. I was there when we went on red alert, when they took over the U.S. Embassy in Iran. And the commander-in-chief was Jimmy Carter. So we were waiting for his order.
Now, listen. Are we going to go through the whole history there? Please share with me your point.
My point is, for the last 46 years, I've been hearing these clowns chanting death to Israel and death to America. After 46 years, now the people there are chanting death to their Ayatollah, whatever. Anyway, it's finally reversed on them now.
I appreciate the call. And listen, I say we need to send in the Marines now. 46 years is plenty of time, and take out their government. That's what I think we should do. And go ahead and kidnap the Ayatollah.
Yeah, I believe it. Just do it. I mean, they had no problem, the students and them taking over Iran. And yeah, they're evil.
60 people who have protested in favor of democracy have already been killed this month. And a clown president gave them over $1 billion in cash on a wooden pallet in an unmarked plane. Not unmarked bills. Send it in an unmarked plane. And
yeah, I know
on his last
too.
Day.
I followed that, yeah.
Unbelievable story. On his last day in office, because he was such a brave man, he waited till his last day when no one could trail him. It's shocking to me, and I'm very grateful that you called, and I hope you enjoyed that interview or were informed by that interview with that wonderful woman. Thank you for listening to Sterling every damn Sunday night. Now we can have the JB Bakery jingle.
Feel the dough. Eat the dough, JB Bakery. Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Now, Father Jim Drucker, who
is
a
traffic loss.
What was that?
Yes.
What was that?
It's my GPS lady, the only lady allowed in my car. GPS was kicking in, taking me back to McGuire Air Force Base, Walter. Sorry.
We don't care. It's off. We don't care where you were going. Listen, no, I mean, it's insane what I have to put up with. Insane.
I know, it's insane.
Father Drucker is a retired Catholic priest and a retired Navy captain. No, Air Force captain, and was the Navy chaplain in Desert Storm live in Afghanistan. My feeling about Iran, this month, over 50 protesters in Iran, Iranians, were killed by their own government for being pro-democracy. They were killed by their own government for being pro-democracy. This is 46 years since the beginning of Nightline till today that we put up with this crap and then made it worse by giving them, $1 billion in cash on a wooden pallet, courtesy of the then president of the United States, Barack Obama. Father, as peaceful as you may be, my opinion is let's send in our competent military and take out the government of Iran by force. How do you feel about that?
Walter, my personal feelings are one thing. My priestly feelings, of which I've given my life to, would be to not do anything aggressive in the sense of trying to start something. I hate to say this because my military, Air Force, even chaplain and combat and Vietnam background would lead me to thinking one way. But being on the radio, and not just to cover my CYA, but we have to be careful in striking too quickly with too much strength and power because we're called to love and peace. And what can I say, Walter? I'm aghast in not being able to say more. We have to be careful.
But
the church
you're not
teaches us not to do anything aggressively. our faith.
But you're a retired priest.
Yeah, but I'm a retired priest with the seal of the Holy Spirit upon my soul, according to the order of Melchizedek, which makes me a priest until I leave this earth and into the kingdom. I certainly pray and hope. So if they were to aggressively come after us, then we have every right under the principle of double effect.
They did. They kidnapped 66 Americans who were working in an embassy.
Then it should have been done then at that time and that point.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It should have been done.
Then
yes.
We would have had a right, even according to the principles and the theological structure of our Catholic Church and faith, of which many churches believe as well. Principle of double effect. We can never intend a direct evil, but we can protect ourselves from evil. So you're absolutely on the mark. And as a military officer, I agree with you completely. And by the way, not to stray from Steve and his wonderful bakery, I was honored yesterday. I was frocked. I'm so proud I'm going to cry a little. I was made a major with the blessings of a wonderful Brigadier General Doug Satterfield. So I want the audience to know that. And I'm so proud to have been taken from company grade to field grade officer as a major in the United States Air Force, retired.
Does that improve your pension?
No, it does not improve your pension.
So I really don't care. I mean, that's nice for you. You got another ribbon. Did you get a new ribbon?
No, it just gives me another rank. Instead of being a captain, I'm now a major, which would be a lieutenant colonel. I'm sorry, lieutenant commander in the Navy. It would be a cluster, a gold cluster, which I'm very proud and very honored and very humbled.
We are also very proud of you, and we're also grateful that you can take a joke, and I appreciate that I can goof around with you. I'd hate for any listener to think I'm being disrespectful of the priest. I'm not being disrespectful of the priest. He's a joker, and the reason he's a joker is because he spent many years as the top 40 disc jockey, and they're all jokers. And even better, he was one of the greatest top 40 disc jockeys who ever lived. Now there's Stephen, one of the greatest bakers who ever lived at JB Bakery, and there's Selena, one of the greatest, most patient women who ever lived. She is the head of marketing at JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Selena, do you see any very important retail baking trends we need to stay on top of?
Well, aside from the fresh hot chocolate chip cookies that I've just been taste testing, I mean, really just any kind of weird food seems to be popular. I mean, we had the Dubai that was kind of like the start of that, I think, which was just like crunchy pistachio chocolate, putting all these different things together. But people really like cereal top things. I mean, very soon we're going to be coming off of everybody's gym spike. Everybody was being healthy. So now we're going to see everyone wanting cereal top donuts, deep fried everything. You know what I mean? So that's going to be my prediction. Over the next few weeks, we're going to see people wanting the really fattening foods, the really great bakery items.
Start again with the items that are deep fried. What is being deep fried?
Donuts. I mean, you'll see even restaurants will do deep fried raviolis. You can deep fry. We make pierogies. You could deep fry those. You can deep fry Oreos. You can deep fry. You could probably deep fry a cake slice. Maybe we could figure out how to do that. Deep fried cheesecake. I mean, that's amazing if you've ever had that. Mm-mm. It's just like crispy on the outside, especially if it's hot, and just creamy on the inside, just melts in your mouth. That's my favorite.
Any particular cheesecake or just plain cheesecake?
Of course, it has to be made with Philadelphia cream cheese. That's the only good cheesecake, in my opinion. You can't skimp out. You can't get the cheap stuff. It's got to be Philadelphia cream cheese.
I agree with you about there are a number of things that you can buy a generic brand, not with cream cheese. The only brand you can buy with cream cheese is Philadelphia. I have tried from time to time to cheap out my family and get the much cheaper cream cheese. It is horrible. It is the worst product imaginable. There are many other products you can get a generic brand. No one will know. It's just fine. It's smarter. Not with cream cheese. It's a fascinating problem. But deep fried cheesecake, it sounds to me crispy on the outside and deadly for a diabetic inside. Is that about right?
That's exactly why it's good.
Exactly. Now, this we offer a free recipe from JB Bakery. These are easy to do recipes, but more importantly, if you do them, your family or your friends or you, because you eat like a pig, will be very happy with these recipes. Steve, what is the recipe that you're offering Midnight Misfits tonight?
The Midnight Misfit chocolate chip cookie, which is always a classic for our listeners. The Midnight Misfit chocolate chip cookie is the one, you know, cookie that everybody's got to have on hand. They got to make it with really rich dark chocolate chip cookies, because that's what a true misfit does. They stay up all night. They bake cookies. They want, you know, they want it sweet and they want it rich. So this is the cookie for, you know, that, you know, staying up all night.
This is for munchies, all night munchies. A chocolate chip cookie. I will send you this recipe if you send me an email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I will send you this recipe. These are fun recipes. Graphically, they look great. Steve puts it together. Easy to follow, easy to make recipes. I didn't say they were all simple, but they're easy to do. And I thank you all. Father, congratulations on your promotion. I hope they come to their senses and give you a raise. And this is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you stories of living with our 8 kids in our very old house. Why did you have garlic in your ears?
Because garlic oil, kills the bacteria that causes ear infections. So that's like my first line of defense. You can hear that, you know, I have a little bit of a sick, gravelly thing going on here. And garlic and oregano are like my two number one go-tos when I have a cold.
I think it's fine. We do a lot of home remedies. You're big on it. What are the kids thinking about this?
So, the older kids are going through a thing right now where I think that they're rebelling, you know, running behind mom's back and taking a Tylenol. But they do laugh at me quite a bit when I tell them to do these things. But then when they do these things and they feel better, like this morning, somebody comes downstairs. I have an earache. What do I do? Here, take this clove of garlic. Let's soften it a little and stick it in your ear.
An actual
clove of garlic.
Right.
I'm not like dripping the, and I grew the garlic myself in the garden, if that makes it any better or any different.
It does. Makes it very Amish.
What's kind of Amish? I don't know if that's an Amish remedy, but it's kind of funny because some of the older kids now are like, you'll hear them say things around the corner like, well, mom doesn't believe in doctors. And that's not really the thing. It's not that I don't quote believe in them. It's, or trust them or for some things. But my first line of defense is the natural stuff. Eating right, taking care of ourselves. You're going to get sick ultimately, but I'm not going to run to the doctor every time I do.
I agree. I would never go to a doctor for my general health. If they have to cut into me or it's an emergency and we need surgery or something, they're fantastic. But for general health, I'm with you.
Right.
100%.
It's kind of that thing. Like, you know, if we have a virus, the doctor's not going to quote cure us from a virus. So we're going to do all of the home remedy things that are available. And some of them might seem pretty hokey, but maybe try them and see why they're old wives' tales or why your grandma did it. Because in general, some of these things really do work.
And I do kind of like it that you smell like a pizza.
I know. I'm going to go home tonight and wrap my feet in onions. So once I get that done, I get the little bit of oregano oil in and I stick those cloves back in my ears, honey. It'll be the perfume of your favorite food coming off of me. And what could you possibly love more than a sick wife who smells like an Italian restaurant?
Follow me on Facebook. Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me or any home remedies, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Live radio, coast to coast. Yeah, it's live. It's not some rerun from Saturday or best of. It's not some best of, because anything that says best of sucks by definition, because you can't go to George in Philly. Welcome to Sterling every damn night.
Hey, Walter, how are you?
Buddy, what's up?
Hey, like your show, man. Listen to you every night.
Thank you.
Listen to your comments on this Iranian thing. My opinion is that the current situation there, there's going to be regime change. Probably in a matter of days, if not weeks. My general feeling is that the U.S. and Israel, we've got the seeds already planted for a regime change there in Iran. But one of the things that has always puzzled me is the 1978 situation was bad. It was nasty. But if you go back to the early 50s, Iran had a democratically elected government.
Correct. Correct.
And right. And as I understand, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it was democratically elected government. The leader at that time, at one point, tried to have relations, reached out to the Soviet Union and other countries, but he also wanted to nationalize the oil industries at the time. And the British had a lot of interest in the oil there in Iran at the time, BP in particular. And it wasn't in the interest of the Brits to have the oil industry nationalized.
No,
so
nationalizing the oil, thank you for your call. Nationalizing the oil was never a good answer. I just say we take out the regime with the military.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
And I want to hear from you at any time. I've got a email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Dave, are you up to speed on this?
Enoch was taken up to the sky. In religion, they say he was taken up to heaven. There, he travels or sees some garden. In the religion, they say, well, he's in the garden of the paradise. In my eyes, no, he's not in the garden of the paradise. He's in a mother spaceship and in a plantation of a mother spaceship.
Dave, that's Eric Von Doniggan. You know he passed away this weekend.
Yes, I do, and it's pretty sad. He was such a visionary for the UFO world and religious studies and ancient alien theory. I mean, the loss of him, I mean, he was in his 90s, I believe, you know, and it's just, it's a sad day. But, I mean, unfortunately, everybody seems to hit that every once in a while. And, you know, when you get called, you kind of got to go.
Do you know what year Chariots of the Gods came out? Do you know what year it came out?
Oh, I think it was in the 1970s, I believe.
That's what I thought. It's 1968. Robert Clotworthy, the announcer for Ancient Aliens, was on the show at the beginning of the show, and he revealed to us that came out in 1968. Now, I didn't bring this up with Robert because I suspect it's a very sensitive topic. The original title of that book was not Chariots of the Gods. It was Chariots of the Gods?
Yes.
That's what the first few editions had. It had a question mark. And then as time went on and it became socialized in our culture, the very concept, the question mark mysteriously disappeared. Was it taken away by aliens?
Those alien editors, those red pen aliens, took away the question mark. That's what it is.
Yes. Yes. Now, what he did that was valuable, putting aside any particular theory, any one of his particular ideas, what he did, though, was he made all of us question the official record of everything. We had to relook at the official archaeologist record, traditional mainstream media, of everything. And, you know, you stand next to a four-ton block, and you're standing there looking at it and go, there's no way that copper chisels and wooden rollers move this. Not possible. But no one had questioned it before Eric Von Däniken. No one had asked the questions. And then you see cave paintings. And this is the one that always gets me. You see cave paintings. Cave paintings made 10,000 years ago by people who were surviving on fire and trying to kill buffalo and eat it. And they made cave paintings that showed human figures pointing to the sky, pointing up to flying saucers. Now, people who made cave paintings, who were trying to eat buffalo and keep a fire going, did not have time for abstract art. They were only painting what they saw, and they were very quick to be done because they had to keep the fire going and chase a buffalo. Therefore, when they say, well, you know, those were... You know, that was just art, or that was just abstract art. They were no. That's what they actually saw. That was their newspaper.
Yes, yes, exactly. And you know, the big thing with a lot of these New Age skeptics, like I like to call them, okay, is they look at everything in a 2026 model. Okay, they're using 2026 theory to justify something like that. And back then, you know what, there was no X, there was no Facebook, there was, you know, no electricity, there was nothing. That is the way they communicated, was through the hieroglyphs on rocks. And nobody at that time is going to know what a spaceship is. They're going to recognize something that they see up in the sky, and they're going to tell the story about it. You know, I mean, the one thing that Von Däniken also was very, very large in researching was the Nazca lines in Peru, where he believed that these giant pieces of carvings and stones that were put there thousands of years ago, that when you go up, you know, a couple hundred feet into the air, you can actually see what they look like. One of them actually looks like a gray alien humanoid. And for them to sit there and say that, you know, somebody made this because they were the, you know, the 4000 BC Rembrandt, you know, is absolutely ridiculous. They were painting this, what they saw, to the gods up above, whoever those gods were, likely not the god we recognize in Christianity, but likely the gods who came from the stars.
You and I are talking to great broadcaster Dave Scott, a known Canadian, a country that gave us Anne Murray and Alana Morissette, both initials AM. And now he's talking about his great radio show on YouTube that you can see anytime that you want on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio. Now, if you go to spacedoutradio.com, you can buy at their Spaced Out Radio shop store. Is it shop or store?
Shop.
Spaced Out Radio shop. He has terrific merchandise, the best thermoses, the best tumblers I have ever used, because they actually fit in the cup holder in your car. Well, plus he has a premium item that I'd like him to tell you about, because it would be immodest of me to tell you about it.
Oh, I think your modesty is unwarranted, because it's true. You could go right now to spacedoutradio.com/shop and pick up your Walter M. Sterling UFO picture, where Walter is in the cockpit of the UFO flying it. It says Sterling every damn night with Midnight Misfits. It's my little tribute to the awesomeness of me being allowed to broadcast the weird and strange to all of you each and every night.
What are your big topics this week? Obviously, you're going to talk about Eric Von Däniken, the man who wrote Chariots of the Gods and is the inspiration for the Ancient Alien Theory on the History Channel. What are your big topics this week on Spaced Out Radio?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit of Bigfoot coming up this week with a good friend of mine, Daryl Denton, who actually believes that you can communicate with Sasquatch using different items of trade. For instance, in one of his hot Sasquatch spots, down in Tennessee, Daryl actually one day decided to put some whistles out there. Just as a joke, like your regular sports coach whistles. And because he was a regular at that spot, as time went on, what he would do is he would actually blow the whistle when he came in. And then he left whistles there for the Sasquatch to see if they would actually take it. Eventually, in just a couple of weeks after this started, in this experiment, he actually started having, when he pulled up in his vehicle, when he got out of the vehicle, he would hear the whistles blowing all around him. Now, he put out five whistles, and at times he would hear one whistle, at times he would hear three whistles. Sometimes, the odd time, five whistles. But it was like they were signaling through the whistles that he had arrived. Now, when we go into places like this, people need to understand, it's easy to sit there and say, oh, a story like that is complete garbage, it's a hoax, whatever it may be. But when we go looking for Bigfoot, people like myself or Daryl Denton, we are actually going into places, Walter, where there are no people. We make sure that there are no people camping in the area. We make sure that there's nobody hunting or hiking or doing anything outdoorsy that would infect what we are trying to do with the Sasquatch. And in this point with Daryl, he has had quite success with the whistles. I put a whistle out at my gifting site. Now, unfortunately, it hasn't done anything yet, and I can't check it until May when the snow melts and I can finally get up to that spot again. But it is something that I'm very curious about, because I don't know how I would react if all of a sudden I walk into the forest, park my vehicle, get out of my vehicle, walk into my hot spot, and all of a sudden I hear the whistle blowing. That might freak me out a little bit.
Have you ever had success, or have your partners ever had success in giving anything to Sasquatch, to leaving anything that they took?
Coins. For some reason, they like coins.
Wow.
Coins.
How do you feel about that? Does that surprise you?
Excuse me. Yes, it does a little bit, because I've tried a lot of things. You know, I listen to, I'm not a researcher by trade. So I get a lot of my points, Walter, from people who've been doing this for a while. For instance, blue marbles in certain areas are supposed to work. Like, so I went and got some blue marbles from the dollar store. Guess what? My blue marbles haven't moved. I've tried using toys, car toys, didn't move. I tried using a dollar store rubber basketball that fits in your hand. I ended up getting fingerprints off of that in 2020. But coins seem to be very effective. I don't know what it is. Maybe I know they don't have monetary sense or value to them, but there is something about coins. We have traded nickels with them. We have traded an item for a dime. We have traded an item for a quarter and a dollar coin in Canada that we call a loonie. And it's amazing how all of a sudden all of this stuff just seems to disappear. And sometimes, like the loonie or the quarter, reappear. It just doesn't make sense.
Dave Scott, Spaced Out Radio. Go to YouTube, spacedoutradio.com, or his amazing website, spacedoutradio.com. Walter M. Sterling, 20 past the hour, coast to coast, Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Know your rights, California. Yeah, sex worker rights. Yeah, there's a bunch of laws that sometimes discriminate against our wonderful exotic dancers. ACLU
in Southern California says, yeah, in California, they have laws that are created to protect sex workers and legal and criminalized sectors. Did you know that a sex worker can be protected because it prevents condoms from being used as evidence? Yeah, condoms can't be used as evidence. Dancers across this country need to be protected. Many strip clubs, no matter where you are, they are independent contractors, these wonderful women, these damsels of delight. And if they are working as independent contractors, well, they don't get breaks. They got to dance as much as possible, otherwise they get fired and move out. And that's just not right. An exotic dancer, after grinding away on people in the champagne room, shaking all her goodies up on stage, she's a little time off. You know, perhaps a Gatorade. And perhaps maybe a snack. I like Tootsie Rolls. I think those are great. Lots of great ways to make sure a dancer is in the best shape and has the energy to make every moment that she's on stage memorable. I like memorable. Thank you, ACLU, for standing up for dancers, standing up for our girls. Finally, an organization that gets it. From the champagne room with some habeas corpus going on. I'm Velo Hool, Strippers on the Loose, Sterling, every damn night.
Lesbians in space, Sterling, every damn night.
Pop quiz, who were the greenest presidents in U.S. history? The Bushes. Get it, because Bushes are green.
You and I had this terrific conversation earlier with Shireen Nariman, a native of Iran. When she was 16, 17, 18, while your kids were dealing with dance class competitions, beauty pageants, Little League, she was in prison. Not in Beverly Hills. She was in prison in Iran. She had made the horrible mistake of protesting in Iran for democracy. She was arrested at the age of 17 and thrown into an Iranian prison in solitary confinement. Her mother had to knock on the doors of the prison until she found her daughter, and then called the Red Cross when they found out what condition her daughter was in. She couldn't see her daughter, but she found out where her daughter was and got the Red Cross to go. She had been thrown into a pit, buried, and they played Russian roulette on her head, the guards. Somehow she survived that. Every night, a colleague of hers from the prison would be taken out and killed. She said that the gunfire smell, the gunpowder smell, was like inhaling one of her friends. Did I mention she was 17? She was there about 2 years. Nope, you and I can't even imagine. When she was finally released and she got to America, she spent the rest of her life, that was in about 1980, she spent the rest of her life supporting all of the anti-government factions that she could possibly support. And she continues to do that today. She was on with Sterling every damn night. We talked to her. She described the horrors and the prison that she was in. And you can hear that on the Odyssey app tomorrow. You can hear that interview tomorrow on the Odyssey app. Go to Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, and WPHT or KMOX or KMBZ or KDKA or KFBK and look for that. And listen to it. It was at the beginning of the show. She was on for 15, let's see, No, it was on the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, and she was on for 15 minutes from 11 to 11:15 East Coast time, and she told her story. And I said to her, how did you feel about Barack Obama taking millions of dollars and putting them on a wooden pallet and shipping them to Iran? How'd you feel about that on his last day in office, like a coward? Well, you got to hear what she said. You have to hear what she said about Barack Obama sending the Iranians billions of dollars on a wooden pallet. You got to hear it. Check it tomorrow on one of the apps. I'm Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night from sea to shining sea.
It was the Golden Globes today, the award ceremony you don't care about. All we care about is that Jeannie Smart won her Golden Globe for Hacks. She should win every award. Not to mention, if you go up against Jeannie Smart and you win, bad karma will come to you the rest of your life, because everybody wants Jeannie Smart to win. And now Jennifer Lawrence discussing the phenomena of being totally nude with men on the first day on the set.
Our first day on set was like a naked scene where we were like attacking each other like tigers.
Yeah.
But it was kind of nice that it was day one, because then it wasn't like hanging over our heads. Yeah.
That's actually brilliant.
Helpful.
It's brilliant.
Once it's done, it's done.
And if you know what the genitals look like, you don't wonder.
Then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah. It is a thing. It's like, not that I want to know. I just sometimes...
Absolutely.
Once you know, it's fine. It's an abstract idea until you see it, and then you're like, ah, we're normal. We're the same.
Retweet.
She's with Amanda Seyfried.
Our first day on set was like a naked scene where we were like attacking each other like tigers.
Yeah.
But it was kind of nice that it was day one, because then it wasn't like hanging over our heads. Yeah.
That's actually brilliant.
Helpful.
It's brilliant.
Once it's done, it's done.
And if you know what the genitals look like, you don't wonder.
Then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah. It is a thing. It's like, not that I want to know. I just sometimes...
Absolutely.
Once you know, it's fine.
It's an abstract idea until you see it, and then you're like, ah, we're normal. We're the same.
I learned that racism is passed down generationally, so it's internalized, which makes sense. I was walking home. It was late at night, and this black guy walks towards me, and instinctively, I grab my purse, even though logically, I know he's not for sale. He did steal my wallet, though.
All right, Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. That's my email address. If you would like the best chocolate chip cookie recipe that you've had in maybe your whole life, it's from JB Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey. No, they are not an advertiser. Wouldn't that make sense? My God, wouldn't it make sense for any bakery, coffee refinery? Hi, we're up late. We're Midnight Misfits, coffee refinery. We're working the great shift, the third shift. I know. How about comfortable shoes, comfortable insoles, really great stand on your feet for 8 hours shoes? That's who should be advertising on this show. Makes sense, right? You're driving an 18-wheeler across the country on that crappy I-90 and the most boring road in the world. I swear to God. And how about comfortable shoes? How about a great thermos? Or that incredible product that allows you to pee in the truck. Yes, these are the proper advertisers for Sterling every damn night. I'd like you to send me an email. You're running a retail business. You're running a national business. It would be great to be able to talk about your product on this show. Am I making a pitch for advertising for my show? Well, it's January. If you're in media, you know what January means. It means you're going to the food bank. But I will do a good job for you. No, I will. I do a good job for the great advertisers that we have, and I'm very happy to have them because I like to eat and I like to be indoors. All you have to do is send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com, and I will answer that email myself. I will call you myself when we will bond. Doesn't that sound fantastic? Isn't that the fantasy that you've always had to bond with a late-night talk show host? I think that's the fantasy you've always had. What else do I want to know? I think that's enough. I think we've done more than enough tonight. It was a great honor to have I always have to work on her name because I'm just a terrible, terrible English major. Shireen Narimon. Shireen Narimon. I thank you for being on. This was a Iranian citizen who was arrested when she was 16, 17 years old and thrown into prison for protesting in favor of democracy. And she was in prison for 2 years as a teenager, tortured and almost killed. And she came on and talked about that. And I asked her the key question. Shouldn't we just go in there and militarily take them out? Isn't that what we should be doing? And her answer is fascinating. You can hear it tomorrow on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. She was on at 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock on the show. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Tender fingers rose to cup her chest, sinking in to the pliant flesh. She squirmed, but couldn't evade their probing touch. A wicked chuckle resonated near her ear. "You've been driving me wild all day," Tabitha whispered. "Since we met, to be honest."
On Sterling.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Yeah. For our first Florida Story, we're going to Key West, Florida, where four Floridians from Port St. Lucie decided to have a weekend vacation in Key West. After bar hopping, getting a little bit intoxicated, the two men and two women were walking back to their hotel. Check that, motel. And one of the women was so drunk, she was having trouble walking. So a 45-year-old Florida man with her sees a wheelbarrow at a nearby construction site, goes and grabs it, puts her in it, and starts toting her back to the motel. Well, as a joke, to try and wake her up, he decides he's going to pour a beer on her head, which it does wake her up, but her friends are not too happy. A fight ensues, he pushes the two women to the ground, and then the guy tackles them, and they're rolling on the ground. He ends up biting off part of his ear. Yeah, like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. And then he just runs off. Cops find him a couple properties down the road. He says, "It wasn't me." They were like, "Florida man, you literally have blood dripping off the side of your mouth like a vampire." Other than that, though, how was your vacation? Hold my beer.
Wait, Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Pembroke Pines, where a martial arts instructor is in trouble. Because you'll never guess what they found in the girls' bathroom.
The owner of a martial arts academy finding himself in handcuffs, accused of placing hidden cameras to spy on his students in the bathroom.
And I'm not victim blaming here, but I think they should have been a little suspicious when the new brand of martial arts he was teaching is called Taekwondo. What? Oh, come on. How the hell am I going to get booed in my own segment? Hold my beer. For our last Florida story, we're going to go to Lee County, where a 33-year-old Florida man was causing a disturbance in a Publix. That's their grocery store chain that's real popular down there. So he gets kicked out, asked to leave, refuses to leave. So they call the cops. Before the cops show up, he jumps on his moped. When's the last time you've seen someone rolling in a moped? And he tries to run from the cops, literally in a moped. Doesn't make it very far. And when the cops pull him over, they ask him to explain himself. And he tells them, "Officers, I'm an undercover FBI agent." So they got his ID and they ran it. You're not going to believe this. The guy getting in a fight at the produce section and escaping on a moped wasn't actually an FBI officer. Man, you can't trust anybody these days.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Books, get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen. Alizira turned toward me, placing her hands on my chest. "You're not upset?" "No, why would I be?" With one finger, I tilted her chin upward to meet my gaze, the moonlight reflected in her emerald eyes. Regardless, if this is all part of who you are, then I look forward to everything you're willing to share with me. Her eyes closed as I leaned down. I brushed my lips across hers with the faintest of touches, afraid if I pushed too far, she'd be summoned away again. No one appeared to interrupt us, and the gentle gesture paved the way for a more zealous kiss. She slid her palms over my shoulders, locking her fingers behind me, and her lips parted to welcome me inside. The sweet taste of honeyed wine on her tongue drove me wild with desire. I tightened my grasp on her waist, pressing her body to mine. As I explored her luscious mouth, I threaded my free hand through her thick curls. When I grazed the bare skin at the base of her neck, she shuddered. "Stay with me tonight," she purred against me in between kisses. "I want to be with you." My heart thudded until I thought it might explode. I couldn't believe what I'd heard. "Are you sure? We haven't known each other for very long, and I don't want you to think I know all I need to know about you, Caleb." Her fists knotted in the collar of my shirt, and her hips rolled toward me. And when I shivered in the corner of my cold, terrible cell, thoughts of you kept me warm. I imagined what it would be like to be safe in your arms, to feel your body touching mine. She traced the edge of the shirt, her fingertips leaving a blazing trail across my skin. "And I wondered if you thought the same things about me." Her words aroused all sorts of provocative memories. "I did. Believe me, I did." I took her hand and kissed the top of it. "I suppose it's in poor taste to refuse a queen's invitation in her own castle." Alizira tossed her head back and laughed, a wide grin spreading over her face. "Let's go inside. The view from the balcony will be even more spectacular at sunrise." A jumble of feelings, from disbelief to red-hot lust, clouded my mind as I followed her back through the doors. Inside her chambers, she used an iron rod to stoke the embers inside a fireplace. Once she had rekindled the flames, she walked the perimeter of the room, extinguishing all the lamps hanging from the walls. When the last of the light came from the dancing fire, she stood in front of it and beckoned to me. I walked slowly, taking in the sight of her exaggerated hourglass figure silhouetted against the orange blaze. Alizira reached for the bottom of my shirt and gave it a yank. Grateful the darkness camouflaged some of my nervous blushing, pulled off the lightweight garment and let it flutter away. Before it hit the floor, she swanned back into my arms and guided me down for another kiss. The heat emanating from the hearth mingled with the fervor building between us. As her chest flattened against me, the plush fabric of her dress rubbed across my bare skin, teasing me with what lay beneath. Without relinquishing control of her lips, I skimmed my palms over the swell of her hips, drawing them up her sides and to the front of her body. Pliant flesh bulged over the top of her snug bodice, begging for attention. I cupped it through the thick velvet, and a soft moan escaped from her mouth into mine. She steered me toward the ties holding her bodice in place. I unfastened the knot, and the weight of her chest helped me loosen the laces. Dipping my hands inside the open flaps, I slid the gown off her shoulders. She pulled away to slip her arms out of the sleeves, and the dress cascaded off her body. Carefully, she stepped out of the burgundy puddle, removing her embroidered slippers as she did so. The roaring blaze in the fireplace bathed her in an ethereal glow, exposing every inch of her to me. Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen, which is available at Amazon. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Music director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke and Matus Bumball, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Quantum Physics, Dave Scott, a Canadian. Ross Coulthart, an Australian. Skullduggery, Vic Ferrari. Blessings, Father James Drucker. Meteorologist, Dr. Dave Iser. Writer, Jerry the Writer. Business Guidance, Craig Kitchen. Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives, David Yadgroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.
A great way to